Hi, you're listening to my favourite Elliott Smith song. In this podcast, we do our best to keep Elliott Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. And it's with a heavy heart that I say welcome to the final episode of our fourth season. I may be a tiny bit biased, but I think we're going out on a high today, though. Our guest for this one is Craig Thomas. Craig is a writer, perhaps best known as the co-creator of the TV show How I Met Your Mother. But he's also written for lots of other things as well, including for The Late Show with David Letterman, an episode of American Dad, and he's written for film as well. And it was as he was starting out his career in writing that he became a big Elliott Smith fan. So in this interview, he talks about how that came about, how Elliott's music helped him through a difficult period in his life, and he shares a great story about hearing his song picked live as well. So here he is, here's Craig Thomas talking to Elizabeth Withstanley.
My name is Craig Thomas. I'm a TV writer and producer mostly, although I do a bunch of other stuff too. I co-created the show How I Met Your Mother is the thing most people might know me from, but I've written for a whole bunch of shows over the years, including Late Show with David Letterman. I'm kind of focusing on movie stuff now, actually a movie musical, no less. And I've been an enormous Elliott Smith fan since the mid-late 90s, and I'm happy to be here to talk about him. Full disclosure, I can't say this is my absolute favorite Elliott Smith song, but the truth is I was so relieved not to have to pick my absolute favorite Elliott Smith song because it's so hard. And I bet other people that have been on your show have talked about that. I have so many favorites at so many different moments. And I saw that this song had not been talked about by anyone yet. And the reason I wanted to talk about it is that I have a very specific memory and image about this song in my own life. The song is Stupidity Tries from Figure Eight.
Got a foot in the dawn.
When I think about that song, I feel like it goes kind of, it starts as like an early Beatles song and ends as a late Beatles song. It sort of goes from this small little song that almost sounds kind of like late 50s, early 60s, like almost like bubblegum pop. Then when it goes out, it's this droning, like punk rock, like Baroque kind of chamber pop, like huge song that's just sort of epic and sweeping and sprawling. And I love the speeds this song accomplishes and the ground it covers in just a few minutes.
Everything here is free. Everything but you and me. This pain together tries. Stupidity tries.
So what drew you to picking this song?
Yeah, so the specific memory I have about it, I was lucky enough to see Elliott Smith play live a few times, both in New York when I lived there. I actually live in New York again now, but I moved to LA for 12 years, nine of which I did How I Met Your Mother. And so I saw him on both coasts at very different times in his life and my life. But when I first became a huge fan of his was when I was writing for Late Show with David Letterman in New York in the late 90s into the early 2000s. I was there like 4.5 years. And I was so young. I started working at that show when I had just turned 22, and I left when I was like 26. And those were the years I just fell in love with Elliott Smith. I'm sure other people have said this too, but like I found him at sort of like a hard chapter in my life. I'd gone through like a bad breakup, and it was like Elliott Smith just was like the universe served him up to me at the moment I most needed him. And so that was probably in like 97, 98. And then he came to tour to play Late Show with David Letterman in I think the spring of 2000, touring behind Figure Eight. And there was, I was just this young writer writing for Late Show with David Letterman. And when you're a young writer writing for that kind of late night comedy variety show, you're always afraid of getting fired. there's like these 13 week contracts, and every ninth week of the 13 weeks, you could just be fired and let go. And so it's like you live in a state of low grade terror at all times. And I was just trying to not piss anyone off and not do anything wrong and try to do a good job. And we were working crazy hours, and people would ask me like, oh yeah, but I bet it's awesome because I bet you're always like going down and like checking out the bands and you're always like around big famous people. No, everyone on the writing staff, there was this feeling that you always had to be working. You always had to be up on the 14th floor up above the Ed Sullivan Theater in Midtown Manhattan. And you, the writers, it was distinctly frowned upon to go watch the music act rehearse. And we could watch it on this feed to our TVs on the 14th floor. So I would always like watch the band rehearse because it was just kind of fun. But for this one, I was like, it's Elliott Smith. Elliott Smith has gotten me through the last couple of years. You know, like fell in love with him probably 97. And this was like 2000. I was like, I am going to sneak down and watch him rehearse. And I had like, I think I'd done it one other time in my like 3 years there at that point. And I think I did it for Radiohead when they came and played Karma Police. And I probably hadn't done it since then, which is probably like 2 years. So I sort of hand in my like writing assignments for that, you know, morning early or whatever time it was, and snuck down and just went to the back of the Ed Sullivan Theater and sat in the darkness where there was no light in the shadows. And I was the only person in the entire auditorium because it was just a rehearsal for camera. There was no one in the audience. And I just sat there and watched Elliott Smith and his band play through Stupidity Tries like two or three times. And it was like having an Elliott Smith concert for one person, and it was me. So then a show. It was surreal. It was sitting in an empty audience having Elliott Smith play for you. I was wondering if he was like able to see me through the lights, like in the shadows, like this creepy person hiding in the shadows, like Phantom of the Opera. And I was just sitting there watching him play. And, you know, anyone who's seen him play might have a similar feeling. You feel he seems so small. You know what I mean? If you go back and you watch that clip of the performance on the show that evening, he has this hat jammed down over his eyes. He looks uncomfortable to be on national television. Still sounds great and kicking ass, but he just looked like small and like he wanted to disappear on this big stage in the spotlights. And you feel so protective over him because you know you love him so much. He's shared so much intimacy and vulnerability with you as a fan. And you sort of have like this immediate, I just remember that feeling of wanting him to be okay. I'm like, what? Like he just looked tiny. It's sort of like when you watch him on the Oscars, you know, that playing Miss Misery in that white suit. He's on that vast stage in the Oscars. And you just feel like, oh, I hope he's okay up there. And he sounds so great.
He looked very uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. He looked like he was trying to disappear a little bit. And he'd had I had that same feeling watching him on the stage the same stage that the Beatles debuted on in 1964. And here's Elliott Smith, who is this enormous Beatles fan. And obviously the influences work a lot. Playing on the same stage, and it's just like it was just an amazing moment. It just felt like very like intimate, but also like I imagined he was thinking, oh boy, I gotta play on national TV tonight. Like there's some part of him that doesn't feel like that guy. I think the enemy is within. Don't confuse me with him. The truth. Otherwise, stupidity tries. Uh-huh.
Was that the first time you saw him perform live?
I'd seen him play a couple times in New York before that, which was amazing. Once was him acoustic at, I think it was like Town Hall, and once was him with a band downtown at, like, I think Irving Plaza or something. And he was amazing. Both were amazing. And in a way, him alone on acoustic guitar, which I saw him do a couple times, whole shows like that, was just so amazing. And like, he has such a power just playing himself. He just can fill the space, even though he has that small, like, he sort of looks like he wants to disappear a little bit, but the power of his music just fills these big spaces. Even on that Oscars show, like, he sounds wonderful. It's beautiful. He filled that Oscar stage, and he went, the hilarious thing, when I was thinking back to that, I watched that clip before we spoke, and he lost to Titanic. His song Lost to My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. And it's just like, is there a wider artistic spectrum than Elliot Smith, Miss Misery, all the way to My Heart Will Go On? And like the idea that he literally lost to Titanic, it's just like, it's just too perfect. He was there and he filled the space and it was beautiful. You know, looking back on it, obviously I wish I had got the guts up to go say hi and meet him. But there is that feeling, and I feel like I've heard other people talk about this and on your podcast, like, you sort of realize he doesn't seem like the kind of person that wants to constantly be approached. And so I let myself off the hook for not doing that. Like, I regret it, but I also feel like maybe that was right. I think Margaret Cho in her interview with you said a similar thing. Like, there's just kind of an energy like, oh, maybe the best thing I could do for him would be to not make him have that conversation and just know that his music is like, I have this, he shares so much of his soul and something so intimate with you through his music. Maybe you don't need to go chat him up. Maybe that's not what it's about. And so I didn't like find a way to do that. And obviously looking back, you know, he was a few years later, he died, and I regretted in some way not being, you know, not figuring that out, some way to go meet him. But I didn't do it. And so I go from floor to floor, looking for a port of call. Another drunkard keeps the door, conquering the governor's ball. I couldn't think.
And were you happy with the song choice? With Stupidity Tries to be the one that he played on Letterman?
I mean, I was a little surprised because, like, yeah, I think there were a couple other songs that were like the singles off of that album. And there are songs that are more up-tempo than that song. There are songs that are more accessible than that song, maybe. So I remember thinking like it was like a bold, like an interesting and bold choice, because it's, you know, it's in like six or something, that song. It has this sort of, you know, almost like a little bit of a waltz feel. He loves that sort of feel in a lot of his songs. And it feels very old school, even in the year 2000. It plays like, it really does start off sounding kind of like a late 50s, early 60s song. It's sort of like, I found myself thinking of that song, like Sleepwalk by Santo and Johnny, and like a couple of those, like almost like sad surf rock sound, kind of like. It's funny because I was trying to think, what does this song Stupidity Tries make me feel right when it starts? And I think of like late 50s, early 60s, sort of like melancholy, like bubblegum pop, surf rock, like, but the sad versions of those. Because, and the chord progression is like very simple, and like it's like E7 A minor, and just like this very sort of like 1950s-ish kind of pattern. And then I was like looking at the lyrics, and I was like, oh, it's funny that I think about that, because there, in the lyrics, he's talking, there's this like ocean and surf imagery. There's like, he talks about a privateer and sailing across the sea of trash. And he talks about a port of call and a drunk conquistador. And I was like, oh, maybe I had never quite put together that, like, that's, he's talking about the ocean. And it sort of has this feeling of like, I could picture like ocean waves underneath the beginning of that song, and the guitar sound and the sort of guitar lead parts. It just begins feeling like a song from another earlier time, which was especially cool watching him play on the same stage that the Beatles debuted on in America. And so I found myself thinking of that, those kind of images. And then the song just goes from that to this big sweeping, you know, there are strings. I think there's a French horn on there. It gets very distorted. It's like, it's almost like this like 50s beach song that sort of like decays and distorts and becomes this discordant big drone by the end. That's still very beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I just love all the speeds that that song achieves in such a short time. But yeah, I thought it was like a surprising choice. I thought he would, you know, Son of Sam or like some, I feel like there were other songs off that album that were sort of like being pushed more, but he clearly wanted to play that song and he did.
Yeah. You know, I thought to myself too, when you had brought up this song and I didn't recall that this was the song that he did on Letterman. Then I was trying to think of why that song. And then I listened to the whole album a number of times just from beginning to end. And there's not really a lot of songs that are like radio play songs on there.
Yeah, right.
But that song does kind of like build and kind of rock at a certain point that, Then it kind of made sense in my mind.
Yeah. It catches your attention because it gets so huge at a certain moment and so distorted and like these droning, like very like, you know, like fuzzy, messy guitars. And yeah, it's really cool. And I mean, it has his kind of signature blend of very, very pretty music and melody, almost like this like parody of like pretty late 50s easy pop song, and then the lyrics just play against it so discordantly. This stupidity tries and like these really dark lyrics set against this really pretty you know, kind of almost familiar at beginning of a song. It almost sounds like, I said, it just sounds like an early 60s pop song, and then the lyrics are placed so, they're so bracing set against that. It comes in and it's like this, these really dark lyrics that are like, you know, sardonic and a little bit hopeless, but also there's something kind of weirdly hopeful about the idea of stupidity trying. Like we all feel stupid, but we keep trying we keep trying to write our little songs or do what we're doing. And there's sort of like, there's almost like a little bit of hidden optimism in the lyric, even though it's also very dark. And just the friction between his lyrics and the prettiness of his music is always so wonderful. It's what makes his songs feel so timeless.
It seems like he's playing a little bit with the idea of fame in a sense too, just with the song starting out, got a foot in the door, God only knows what for.
Yeah.
I mean, by this point he had, you know, been successful in his previous albums. So it seems like he's kind of wrestling with, okay, I'm there. What do I do with that?
Yeah, for sure. He talks about, yeah, like conquering the governor's ball and like, yeah, getting like, you feel like he's basically, it's a song about you get a foot in the door and then you're trapped somewhere that you don't want to be. And him playing that on this big stage of the Ed Sullivan Theater to air to millions of people on CBS that night. Like, yeah, it's in a way, maybe that's why he chose that song, just so he could be singing this message. He could be singing kind of, you know, this, essentially singing a song against the very thing he was doing, which is having flaring spotlights shown on him. And he's singing this song that's sort of like tearing up and stomping on that idea a little bit in this very clever way. He's this sort of stealthy sneaking in this message, a kind of against like commercialized presentations of music in one of the biggest spaces for a band to play, to sell records. And yeah, I kind of love that. It felt like it, the more I think about it, it had to be part of why he played that song on that stage.
I couldn't think the thing that I hope tomorrow brings. Oh, what a surprise, stability drive. Ah.
And you mentioned that you saw him perform a number of times, some on the East Coast and some on the West Coast. After you moved out to Los Angeles, you saw him perform?
Yeah, it's funny. If I sort of continue the timeline forward, by a couple years after that, that show, that private concert for one that I had with him, I saw him play a couple different times in LA. And yeah, this is the part where the story gets sadder. I saw him play a show, like Rilo Kiley opened for him at the Henry Fonda Theater, I think it was, in like early 2003. And he wasn't at his best. He seemed like something was wrong. I'm sure other people have talked about this on your podcast. And he seemed a little lost. It seemed like something was wrong. He was playing songs and stopping and deciding to switch to a different song. And it seemed like something was wrong. And you know, by later that year he would be dead. And looking back on it, it feels so chilling. You feel like, oh, you know, I won't pretend I have any insights or anything to add to like what he was going through at that time. I'm just a fan, but, it was so clear something was wrong, and you wish that somehow, so, you know, it could have all worked out okay. And it could have worked, whatever help he got or didn't get. It's hard to not look back and feel sad about that. It was still a good show. It was still getting to hear him in some way, but he wasn't himself quite. It wasn't in the form that I had seen him earlier.
And you mentioned, you know, you're fond of Stupidity Tries that you chose, but you mentioned that there was maybe another song that maybe you would classify as your favorite. I'm just curious as to what song that is.
Yeah, I should say too, my son's name is Elliot. It's in part just because we loved the name. My wife grew up like loving that name as a possible boy name. But then we fell in love with Elliot. Like, I fell in love with Elliot Smith. I made her fall in love with Elliot Smith. We became super fans and saw him a bunch. And it feels like sort of part of why we love that name. And then we had a kid in 2007. His name is Elliot Thomas. Which feels like as close to Elliot Smith as possible, like Elliot and then like a really common last name. And yeah, so when he was a little baby, he was born, he had like a whole bunch of health problems and all sorts of things that were unexpected to us and that are far too detailed to get into in this podcast. But he was basically for 6 weeks, he had open heart surgery. He was in the NICU at Children's Hospital of LA for like 6 weeks. And we couldn't hold him because he was, you know, before his surgery, he was supposed to be like gaining weight and staying warm in this incubator. So we couldn't really take him out. Then after surgery, he was hooked up to all this stuff and he had this big scar. So we really couldn't hold him for a long time. And what we would do to connect with him, we would sing songs to him. And we would just sing songs we liked, not necessarily like kid songs. And we would sit around and a couple of Elliot Smith songs were like in the rotation of like things we sang to him as he was healing in this incubator. And so like Say Yes and Between the Bars are like two of the songs that I kind of have sang to him all through his life. And then when we got him home, I would get the guitar and we'd sing him to sleep in his crib. And I would usually play one of those couple of songs, sometimes Miss Misery. So like all of those songs, but specifically those two, Say Yes and Between the Bars, are just ones that like just meant a lot to me. And then have this like special connection to my son. And actually like the project I'm trying to work on now, that I'm hoping to make next year, is this movie musical about that experience, about my son's first 6 weeks in the hospital. And it's a musical because we sang to him and that was the way we sort of like connected to him. And when I think about what we were really singing to him, it was definitely a few Elliot Smith songs sort of over and over again and mixed in with other things that we liked. So that's sort of like another just special memory I have about Elliot's music.
And the surgery that your son had when he was a baby had solved his problems? Like, was he healthy? Has he been healthy with that?
He's 14 now, and he has, so he has a rare genetic syndrome, part of which is the heart stuff, but that was fixed all in one surgery, which is like a miracle. He does have like some learning differences and some health stuff, but he's in general doing great. And he is the single most musical person I know. He has perfect pitch. He can hear you like ding a piece of silverware off a glass of water and know that it's like an A flat. And he plays drums and piano, and I sort of play guitar. And the way I sort of got through the pandemic without losing my mind was just learning like tons of songs with him to play on guitar and drums. And he's really good at the drums in a way that we had been told like maybe he wouldn't have like the motor skills to do. And he's like miraculously really good at it. And we're sort of like a little band. He's doing really well and is just like a truly musical soul. I'm not like super spiritual, but I sometimes think like music is like what kept him here and why he wanted to hang on and be in this world. Just in general, Elliott Smith's music has been, it's the thing I turn to when I'm having a hard time. Like if I'm in a moment of stress and feeling lost, I just like, it couldn't be more cliche. I like will like get in a bath, light a candle, and like listen to Elliott Smith songs. It's like it's one of those moments where like I hate myself for what a cliche this is right now. But like his music is just that thing I turn to when I don't know. I just need permission to be quiet and feel things. And no one sounds better harmonizing with themselves than Elliott Smith. No one doubled and tripled his voice like Elliott Smith. He's just, it's such a like, there's so much to notice about his music. And like, I find myself always trying to like learn the harmonies and sing some harmony part. And it's always him with himself. He was just so, it feels like such a metaphor for him. He was such a one-man band. Like he just sounded so good with himself. And there's something so beautiful about that. And there's also something kind of lonely about it. But it's just, it's just beautiful music. And it's the thing I listen to the most is his music. Mm-hmm. And it's what I listen to when I'm having a hard time, for sure.
So thank you very much to Craig for being a guest on the show and for sharing so many great stories with us. If you want to hear a recording of Elliott Smith playing Stupidity Tries on David Letterman, then you can find a link to it in the notes for this episode. And I'm sorry to say that's nearly it for this episode and this season as well. I just want to say a big thank you to everyone who's listened to the podcast, shared it, suggested guests, and generally provided us with amazing support. More than anything else, we are big Elliott Smith fans, and it's always such a pleasure to chat with other people in the community. We'll be taking a break for a little while, but all being well, we'll be back with a new season in the new year. Though if you do want to stay in touch with us in the meantime, you can of course find us on social media or email us at info@myfavoriteelliottsmithsong.com. And to finish us off, we got sent this great listener pick from Kristen in California, so I thought there would be no better way to round off the season. I hope you enjoy Kristen's pick, and we'll see you very soon.
Hi, I'm Kristen, and my favorite Elliott Smith song is, like it is for everybody, an impossible choice. But one that sticks out to me is a little bit lesser known one called Where I Get It From. Where I Get It From is not my favorite because it's particularly incredible musically. I don't have the slightest clue about music theory or composition, honestly. But it's a favorite because of the reason why I fell in love with Elliott Smith's music to begin with, when my brother introduced me to it at 13, just a few months before Elliott's passing. That reason's his lyrics and his delivery of those lyrics. Where I Get It From is this kind of adorable, hokey, folksy song, and it outlines his kind of character traits and how he had quote-unquote inherited them from various family members. And it's this comical, self-deprecating, but celebratory expression of himself. And I always admired him for that kind of realistic somber. Sometimes there's glimmers of optimism, but in the end, always a very genuine way of expressing the human condition, and his ability to kind of take the piss out of himself, but still be sincere. And I see that as a really rare thing. One of my favorite lines in that song is, great granddad went mad, he was totally tweaked. He wore the same suit every day of the week. When I asked how it felt to be such a freak, he said, you tell me, son. And I guess that's where I get it from. And then he goes into this kind of recurring kind of imitation yodel, I guess maybe a nod to his Texas roots. But I've always appreciated that reflection on how our upbringings inform who we are and how to be aware of those things to prevent a cycle from recurring or repeating where we don't want them to. Anyways, it's just a short kind of lighthearted one. And as far as I can tell, he wrote it very young, perhaps even in high school. And I always admire that he seemed to have such an incredible gift of insight, even at a super young age, that he could share with the world. As far as favorite on albums, I'd probably say Southern Belle, but that's for a different time. Thanks for this podcast. It's really insightful and beautiful to hear everyone's thoughts and interpretations and celebration of the music. It's really a beautiful person that Elliott Smith was and continues to be. Cheers.